Welcome to today's Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American, read by volunteers at the Recording Library of West Texas. This production is also available at recordinglibrary.org and on the telephone reader by calling 432-617-5555.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Saturday, January 18th, 2020. This is Section A. The headline reads, Numbers Don't Lie. MISD Bond. Bond fails unofficially by 26 votes. Judge needs to approve outcome. By Brandy Addison. Midland ISD's $569 million bond has failed by 26 votes, just one vote off from the original outcome during the general election, and both parties have agreed to submit a court order to approve this as the final outcome, which won't be official until the judge approves it. Lawyers from all sides have said there shouldn't be a final court hearing, and the election process will be completed once Judge Mackie K. Hancock approves the outcome. Hancock's approval is expected early next week. This final result follows nearly 2 months of investigation after the recount, petitioned by the pro-bond committee We Choose Our Future, revealed an 820-vote discrepancy between the manual paper ballot recount and the electronic tabulations from the general election on November 5th and 12th. The Midland County Elections Office discovered a missing ballot box in mid-December. The box contained 836 ballots that were tabulated in the general election but were not available to be tallied during the recount. They also discovered one ballot in an electronic voting machine from the Manor Park voting location. The total Friday included these 837 ballots, and the final outcome showed 11,800 votes in favor of the bond and 11,826 votes against the bond. Interveners originally wanted to void the outcome and order a new election because there was an error in the box's chain of custody, and no one was certain if the box had been tampered with. Attorney Trey Traynor said Friday the interveners agreed to submit a court order for approval of this outcome because the ballots were accurate and they did not believe the missing box was tampered with. Christine Foreman, co-chair of We Choose Our Future, said there still was the need for a bond to be passed and new schools, and she hopes there will be a new election soon. There still are students without seats, Foreman said. This article is entitled, Gas Prices, Drivers in Midland, Odessa Are Paying the Most, by Stuart Doreen. The highest average prices for gas in the state of Texas are back in the Permian Basin. AAA Texas reported this week that the price of gasoline dropped 9 cents in El Paso, meaning Midland and Odessa were the locations where drivers are paying the most for gasoline. Drivers were paying $2.49 a gallon for regular unleaded in Midland and $2.46 in Odessa. El Paso came into the week with an average of $2.51, but AAA Texas reported an average of $2.42 on Thursday. The organization surveys 27 of the largest metropolitan areas weekly. Drivers in Sherman, Denison, which is located northeast of the Metroplex, are paying $2.13 a gallon. Not only are drivers in Midland, Odessa paying, on average, at least 20 cents more than the state average, but the price in the area is higher than in other West Texas cities. San Angelo's average of $2.31 is the closest to the average in Midland, Odessa. AAA Texas reported an average of $2.21 in Amarillo, $2.22 in Lubbock, and $2.24 in Abilene, where the price dropped 9 cents week over week. Distributors have told the Reporter Telegram there are many complexities in the fuel business that impact pricing. They point to the high cost of transportation from Gulf Coast refineries and Midland's distance from pipelines. There are also issues with the high cost of living, at least in Midland and Odessa, where rents have climbed at rates incomparable around the state. AAA Texas stated in its weekly report that despite crude oil price fluctuation and growing geopolitical concerns with Iran in recent weeks, gas price averages across the country are falling. Increasing gasoline supplies continue to help put downward pressure on pump prices, AAA Texas spokesman Daniel Armbruster stated. As long as supplies remain healthy and demand for gas is low, drivers should continue to see lower pump prices. According to the Energy Information Administration's latest report, total gasoline stocks in the region grew by just more than 1 million barrels to 32.65 million barrels week to week. The current supply level is nearly 2 million barrels higher than last year's level at this time, which will likely continue to help prices in the region decline throughout the week. Drivers in Midland paid an average of $2.43 for gas 1 year ago. That also was the highest price in the state, and 33 cents higher than the state average at that time. This article is entitled Fatality, DPS, Florida Man Dies in Two-Vehicle Wreck, from Staff Reports. A 55-year-old Cutler Bay, Florida man died Thursday afternoon after a two-vehicle wreck at the intersection of Farm to Market Road 1379 and County Road 160, according to a press release from the Texas Department of Public Safety. Joseph A. Davis was driving a Kenworth truck tractor, towing a semi-trailer westbound on County Road 160. A Dodge Ram 2500 towing a trailer was southbound on Farm to Market Road 1379. Davis ran the stop sign and hit the pickup, according to the release. Davis, who was not wearing a seatbelt, died at the scene. The pickup driver, a Cristoval man, and his three male passengers, one from Odessa and two from San Angelo, were transported to Midland Memorial Hospital. The wreck occurred about 4:30 p.m., 8 miles east of Midland. Davis is the fourth person to die in wrecks on roads in Midland County this year, and the third in 6 days, according to Reporter Telegram records. A Midland man and a Miami man died in a two-vehicle wreck January 10th on Farm to Market Road 1208, according to a previous Reporter Telegram article. At this time last year, one person had died in wrecks on roads in Midland County, according to Reporter Telegram records. This article is entitled, Ladd Wasn't Top Fundraiser in Race for District 3. New council member came in third in contributions, expenditures, by Stuart Doreen. Jack Ladd Jr. wasn't the leader in money raised or spent, but that didn't stop him from winning the District 3 race for Midland City Council. Campaign finance reports turned into the city secretary's office this week show Ladd was third in the five-person race to represent Central Midland. Documents show he raised $28,375,000 and spent $33,426.53 en route to his victory. Robin Poole led all District 3 candidates with $45,364.85 raised. E.J. Baldridge was second with $41,706.24. Baldridge spent $57,562.47 and Poole $52,482 to lead all candidates. Between the five, which also included Catherine Chandler and Bradley James, there was nearly $146,000 spent on the race. James didn't raise any funds and didn't spend anything. He also didn't participate in any debates. Campaign reports show some candidates spent money to repay loans provided, which might explain the difference in money raised and spent overall. Ladd won the November 5th election with 35.46% of the vote. Poole was second with 33.95%, Baldridge 17.04%, Chandler 10.36%, and James 2.48 rounded out the five. This is the section called State Briefs from Wire Reports. Galveston. Search suspended days after deadly collision. Days after a fishing boat's collision with a chemical tanker just off the Texas coast left one person dead, the U.S. Coast Guard suspended the search for two fishermen. The Coast Guard and its partners completed over 10 sorties, searched over 9 hours, and covered an area of around 50 square miles, but the crew members weren't found, Commander Jordan Baldueza said Thursday. An 81-foot fishing boat, Pappy's Pride, capsized after colliding with the 600-foot tanker Bow Fortune near the entrance to Galveston Bay on Tuesday. two of the fishing boat's crew members were pulled from the water and turned over to paramedics, while two other crew members were reported missing. One of the rescued crew members died a short time later, the Galveston Beach Patrol said. About 500 feet of containment booms were deployed around the capsized fishing boat, which was carrying 14,000 gallons of diesel fuel, and an oil sheen was reported around the vessel, the Coast Guard reported. Teams performing an impact assessment didn't detect damage to wildlife or contamination of the shoreline, Commander Eric Carrero said Thursday. The cause of the collision remains under investigation, the Coast Guard said. The names of the crew members haven't been released. Huntsville. Ex-USA gymnastics trainer has sexual assault count dropped. Texas prosecutors on Friday dropped a sexual assault charge against a former trainer who worked alongside imprisoned ex-sports doctor Larry Nassar at the famed Caroli Gymnastics Ranch. Deborah Van Horn, 64, was charged in Walker County, Texas in June 2018 with a count of second-degree sexual assault of a child, making her the first person other than Nassar to be charged in connection with his assaults. Prosecutors said Van Horn, who had worked at USA Gymnastics for 30 years, was charged for acting as a party with Nassar. Texas law of parties holds a person criminally responsible as a party to an offense if the offense is committed by his own conduct, by the conduct of another for which he is criminally responsible, or by both. However, Walker County District Attorney Will Durham said there was insufficient evidence to take Van Horn to trial. Therefore, Deborah Van Horn will not be prosecuted as a party to the 2012 offense alleged to have been committed by Nassar, he said in a prepared statement. This is the obituary column, Saturday, January 18, 2020. Beatrice Meraz Carrasco. Beatrice Meraz Carrasco, 80 years old, passed away to be with our Lord on Monday, January 13, 2020. Funeral at 1 p.m., visitation 2 p.m., rosary 3 p.m., vigil service at Lucas Funeral Home, 700 West Wall Street in Grapevine, Texas, 76051. Beatrice was born in Durango, Mexico, on February 14, 1939, to David Meraz and Concepcion Delgado Martinez on Valentine's Day. Beatrice was preceded in death by her late parents, one daughter, Carmen Carrasco Urias, two sisters, Rosie Rivas and Auralia Hernandez, survivors, children Elizabeth Carrasco, Anthony Ray Carrasco, Michelle Carrasco Fuentes, seven grandchildren and three great-grandchildren, one brother, Cruz Montanez, two sisters, Sylvia Sanchez and Norma Montanez, as well as numerous family and friends. Jose Armando Ramirez. Jose Armando Ramirez, 40, of Midland, Texas, passed away on Sunday, January 12, 2020, in Eagle Pass, Texas. Viewing will be Saturday, January 18th, from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, January 19th, from 1 p.m. to 9 p.m., at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home, 405 North Terrell Street, Midland, Texas. A funeral service will be Monday, January 20th, at 1 p.m., also at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. He is survived by two daughters, Iris Ramirez, Izeda Ramirez, his mother, Olga Gomez, his father, Oscar Javier Ramirez, one brother, and three sisters. Elizabeth Ann War. Elizabeth Ann War, 80, of Midland, passed away Wednesday, January 15, 2020, at her residence. She was born October 17, 1939, in Winfield, Kansas, to the late Ruth Lunsford and Harrison Thomas. No services are scheduled at this time. Please visit ellisfuneralhomes.com to leave online condolences. Glenda Holder. Glenda Holder, 77, of Odessa, passed away on January 16, 2020, in Odessa, Texas. Glenda was born on February 16, 1942, to Melvia and Fred Wagner in Harris County, Texas. No services have been scheduled at this time. Arrangements by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home and Crematory. This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Sunday, January 19th, 2020. This is Section A. The headline reads, Election. Odessa expected to play a big role in congressional election. By Caitlin Randall. Candidates vying for the 11th congressional district seat will have a difficult time winning without carrying the city of Odessa, in a district that was designed around the Midland-Odessa population. Odessa businessman Kirk Edwards said Odessa, Midland, San Angelo, and Granbury are the cities crucial to the election, but it would be impossible to win against a candidate who won in both Odessa and Midland. Edwards ran for the state Senate in 2004 when Midland and Odessa were part of District 31, and before redistricting, led by Representative Tom Craddock, made Midland and Odessa the most populated cities in District 11. He carried Odessa and Midland in the race, receiving 90% of the votes cast in Ector County and 77% of the votes cast in Midland County. Comparatively, former Midland Mayor Mike Cannon received about 70% of the vote in Midland County and 58% of the vote in Ector County when he ran against Kel Seliger in 2014. Edwards said there's usually a common theme to win both Odessa and Midland, as both cities are at the epicenter of the oil and gas industry. However, the unincorporated area of West Odessa is unique to Ector County, he said. West Odessa had a population of 22,000 in the 2010 census. He said residents there are living without their own water system, sewage system, and police department, along with myriad infrastructure issues. I hope our next congressman will bring the people of West Odessa up to the modern standards of the rest of Texas, Edwards said. It's a shame that in the past they haven't been addressed more. Ector County Republican women hosted a forum Wednesday for the 9 Republican candidates in the race. Club President Sherry Hurt said she expects Odessa will be playing a big role in the election to replace Representative Mike Conway, who is not seeking re-election. Hurt attributed Odessa's importance in part to the rise of the Ector County Republican Women's Club, which recently announced it has the most members of any chapter in the country. She said she believes Odessans are primarily concerned with maintaining the status of the Permian Basin, as well as road repairs and fully staffing the police department and sheriff's office. Obviously, with the tragedy that affected our cities, we want to make sure we have enough law enforcement, she said. Additionally, she said, Odessans are concerned about the possibility of redistricting. The upcoming 2020 census will create an opportunity for redistricting, and many people are concerned District 11 will be redrawn if a Midlander or Odessan isn't elected. Former Midland Mayor Ernest Angelo said he's supporting a Midlander in the election. There has historically been tension between Odessa and Midland, but Angelo said he hopes Odessans would back a Midlander, or vice versa. I think relations between Midland and Odessa are light years better than they used to be, he said. He added, if the candidate is from Midland, I hope Odessans would support him, and if the candidate is from Odessa, I hope Midlanders would support him as well. It's important to be united on something so critical to the area. This article is entitled Elections. Report: Pro Bond Group received $276,000 in contributions by Brandy Addison. Special Purpose Action Committee We Choose Our Future, which supported Midland ISD's $569 million bond, received $45,000 during the last filing period, which was October 27th to December 31st. According to campaign finance report filings for the period that ended this past week. That brings the total of contributions from August 8th to December 31st to $231,500, with more than half of it unspent. Co-chair Christine Foreman previously told the Reporter Telegram the leftover $144,000 will be donated to Midland ISD's Education Foundation. Better Bond for Midland, a group that opposed the bond referendum, led by Chair Brandon Hodges, had not yet filed its final campaign finance report with the Secretary of State as of 5 p.m. Friday. We choose our future: monetary political contributions from corporations or labor organizations. The total monetary contributions received from two corporations this filing period total $45,000. Cimarex Energy Company donated $25,000 and Parsley Energy Operations, LLC, donated $20,000. Political expenditures made from political contributions. We Choose Our Future's political expenditures made from contributions total $122,621.17 this filing period. Expenditures of $250 or greater include $43,149.95 action printing, advertising and printing expenses, $19,435.45 Booker Industries advertising expense, $10,453 JLG PR Consulting DBA Red Pixel advertising expenses, $10,129.77 The Tyson Organization polling calls, $9,000 Midland Reporter Telegram advertising expenses, $5,360 KOSA TV advertising expense, $4,500 Rick Davis as president of MISD Board of Trustees polling expenses, $3,500 Rig ID advertising expense, $2,709.57 Facebook advertising expense, $2,590 KWES TV event expense, $2,486.25 Tegna Media Advertising advertising expense, $2,200 Campaign HQ consulting and advertising expenses, $1,620 Dave Joyner event expense, $1,500 Courtney Lunsford polling expenses, $1,254.33 Current Media Partners advertising expense, $482 American Airlines travel in district, $447.88 Permian Basin Office Products advertising expenses, $439.34 Chick-fil-A event expense, $306.68 Southwest Airlines travel in district, $275 Cody's Red Balloon event expense. Interest, credit, gains, refunds, and contributions returned to filer. We Choose Our Future received $500 from A1 Sign Engravers. This article is entitled Community. Panel discussion highlights Senior Life Midland's MLK celebration by Rich Lopez. Life's most persistent and urgent question is, what are you doing for others? That was the question Senior Life Executive Director Kathleen Kirwan-Haney asked during her welcoming remarks Saturday at a Martin Luther King Jr. celebration at the Southeast Senior Center. The event featured live performances, refreshments, and a speaker panel. We need to be thinking about that in our everyday life, Kirwan-Haney said. It can start with me, with very small things. The panel featured Mayor Patrick Payton, the Reverend Barack Stanford from Lighthouse Pentecostal Church, Police Chief Seth Herman, Midland High School Principal Leslie Sparacello, Blessings from Heaven Learning Center Director Lisa Chambers, retired MISD teacher Lois Hillary, and Lee High School senior Courtney Thomas. SLM Program Director Saul Herrera moderated the panel. Topics included Midland's growing senior population, its younger generation's contributions, and advocating for community involvement. We always have some different perspectives on what their makeup is, Herman said, when asked about his take on young professionals in Midland in relation to their contributions to the community. Now it's millennials. Prior to that, it was generation something or other, and I was something else. I have never worked with some of the more selfless and more community-oriented people than I have with this current generation. We have members volunteering not only with their time, but their money. I'm inspired by what they do. When asked about making a substantial difference in the community, the recently sworn-in mayor focused on bridging the divide among those communities and people who think and vote differently. There seems to be a lot of energy on seeing how divisive we can be, then seeing how harshly in public we can criticize someone, Peyton said. We start to impugn people's character, their integrity, and their name. I would hope that we as a community, that we move forward in some of our most abundant times and would start seeking to understand each other before trying to be understood. We should find a way to demonstrate unity that has somehow disappeared and that may even be exacerbated by how Democratic or Republican you are. What I care about is can we come together and do something together? The audience responded strongly to Thomas's response regarding the growing senior community and the impact in their quality of life as Midland moves forward. We're getting very technologically advanced, and I feel that the senior population needs to become part of that, Thomas said. Lots of times we just forget about them. We leave their wisdom and all of that with them. If we take them on this journey as we become more advanced, they need to come along to show us and to guide us. The forum followed an opening prayer by Pastor Tommy Hall of Mount Calvary Missionary Baptist Church, a live performance by the Southeast Line Dancers, and the senior sing-alongs led by Sue Roseberry. This article is from the section Eye on Development. Report: Midland County ranks first in average tax refund received. From staff reports, people in Midland County received the highest average refund amount in Texas, according to Smart Asset, a financial technology company. Smart Asset reported that 58,390 taxpayers received an average tax refund of $4,604. Smart Asset also reported that 14,890 taxpayers in Midland County owed an average of $16,171, the fourth highest in the state. Of the top 10 counties for average amount owed, seven were in the Permian Basin, including Midland, Martin, Glasscock, and Howard. Last year, Smart Asset ranked Midland as number 4 for refunds and number 6 for taxes owed. This article is entitled Railroad Commission. Midland region dominates state in permits completions. From staff reports, the Midland region again led the state in permits to drill oil and gas holes, new oil completions, and new gas completions, according to numbers released for December from the Railroad Commission of Texas. The Railroad Commission reported the Midland region also accounted for more than 50% of all permits to drill and new oil completions during the month. The number of new gas completions just missed the 50% threshold. The RRC reported issuing 803 original drilling permits in December. Of those, 430 came from Midland's district, 53.5%. The next closest total for a district was 102 in the San Antonio area. The commission reported that original drilling permits was 8 fewer than last year. The Midland district also accounted for 53.5% of the 491 new oil completions in the state. The 264 new oil completions were 196 more than the next closest district, San Antonio. When the new gas completions were included, the Railroad Commission showed the Midland region topped the San Antonio area by more than a 2-to-1 ratio. The 46 new gas completions were 46.9% of the 98 statewide in December. The Commission's number of drilling permits across the state in December included 743 permits to drill new oil or gas wells, 8 to re-enter plugged well bores, and 52 for recompletions of existing well bores. The breakdown of well types for those permits is 162 oil, 37 gas, 571 oil or gas, 273 injection, 0 service, and 10 other. In December 2019, commission staff processed 491 permits for oil, 98 gas, 17 injection, and 3 other completions, compared to 564 oil, 156 gas, 27 injection, and 3 other completions in December 2018. This article is entitled Motran Reports on Midland International Airport. The number of people flying commercial air service from Midland International Airport is greater than those flying from Lubbock, Abilene, and San Angelo combined, according to Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Monday, January 20th, 2020. Death notices. Evangelina Gomez. Evangelina Gomez, 83, of Midland, passed away Friday, January 17th, 2020, in Midland, Texas. Viewing will be Tuesday, January 21st, 2020, from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary starting at 7 p.m. Tuesday evening at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Chapel. Graveside service will be Wednesday, January 22nd, 2020, at 11 a.m. at Serenity Memorial Gardens. She is survived by her husband, Manuel Gomez, 2 sons, Carlos Gomez and Eddie Gomez. Hello, this is Kay reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Monday, January 20th, 2020. Mom regrets her marriage set a poor example for kids. Dear Abby, I married someone who turned out to be very abusive and controlling of me and the kids. I felt powerless to leave with them because of the emotional control, and I had no way to make a living to support them. They are all adults now, and 3 of them have been in unhealthy relationships. I know their example of a good marriage or a long-term relationship was awful because of how their father treated me. I live with the guilt and pain of that, but beyond that, seeing 3 of my 4 kids in similar abusive relationships is painful. When 2 of my girls reach out to me when things are not going well, I'm supportive and I try to be helpful. I guess my question is, given my example of an unhealthy marriage, will any advice I give them fall on deaf ears? Should I just listen? I don't feel like anything I say will help. Unhappy Mom in the South. Dear Unhappy Mom, of course you should listen, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't also weigh in on what is happening to them. It could be very helpful if you point out to them that what they witnessed while growing up was not normal, and explain what is acceptable behavior in an adult relationship. You might also apologize for not being stronger earlier on and explain that their father had eroded your self-esteem to such an extent that you were paralyzed. If their experiences mirror your own, point that out too and offer them the number of the National Domestic Violence Hotline, 800-799-7233. If you do, it might not only open their eyes, but also give them the escape they need. Dear Abby, my siblings and I have always enjoyed spending quality time together, and every 8 to 10 weeks or so we get together for Siblings Day. There's no set schedule or particular date. One of us will call the others and say, "I need some siblings time." There are 5 of us, all over 60. Sometimes we meet at one of our homes and play board games or cards, or dance in the living room and enjoy the laughter that comes with it. It's a time when we just enjoy being family. Our brother's lady friend, a very nice person, has arrived uninvited the last 3 times we have gotten together. Talk about a party pooper. We have explained, as graciously as we know how, that these times are very important to us. Our brother has asked her to please allow us this time for family. But she just laughs and says it's silly for grown people to be so needy of each other. She has 6 siblings who live close by and with whom she keeps in contact. We all love each other and are aware that life is truly short and that we are very lucky to still have this close bond when so many families do not. Can you suggest what we can do to make her understand what this time together means to us and that she is the ultimate uninvited guest? Just the Sibs in Louisiana. Dear Sibs, what gall! Your brother's girlfriend does not have the right to judge your family spending time with one another as silly. It's the height of rudeness. Please point out to him that her behavior is an important red flag for him to consider. The next time she drops by uninvited, your brother should put his foot down and not let her intrude. Dear readers, today we remember the birthday of Reverend Martin Luther King, Jr., who in 1968 was martyred in the cause of civil rights. In that time of insanity, his was a voice of reason when he eloquently preached, "Love is the only force capable of transforming an enemy into a friend." Dear Abby, write Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Odessa American, Sunday, January 19th, 2020. This is Section A. This article is entitled Touching Tribute, Compass Art Teacher Inspired to Create Portrait of Leela, by Ruth Campbell. Like many Odessans, Compa Academy Charter School art teacher Adam Cross had never lived in a community impacted by a mass shooting. But on August 31, 2019, he was, personally. A former student, 15-year-old Odessa High School sophomore Leela Hernandez, was among 7 people killed and 25 injured by gunman Seth Ator. Up until this year, Cross had taught art at Ector County College Prep Success Academy. This is his first year at Compass. In 8th grade, Hernandez was a student of his. Cross has always done his own work in addition to teaching. Lately, he is focusing more on pencil portraits of people. He had previously created portraits for people who had lost loved ones and even people who just wanted a drawing of their family member or pet. His drawing includes portraits of Leela through the years from a baby to a drawing based on her quinceanera picture. Leela herself was an inspiration. Just remembering her and the type of student that she was, and just her personality, made me think of it, Cross said. At the beginning, she was a little quiet, a little soft-spoken, kind of shy a little. But once she got out of her shell a little bit, she was just so friendly and so polite. Just a really nice student. Always respectful. Yes, sir. No, sir, he added. Cross said he found Leela's mother, Joanna Leva, through Facebook. I found her because she had a picture of Leela up as her profile picture, and I just sent her a message through Facebook Messenger. I told her who I was, and I was Leela's teacher, and I draw portraits for people on the side, and that I wanted to do one for her free of charge, he said. If she had some favorite pictures, she could email them to me, and I would use those for the drawing. She said she would love that, and she sent me the pictures. Whenever I finished, I drove it out to their house. We talked for a little bit and shared some memories of Leela. When he gave the family the drawing, there was a moment of silence. They were just staring at it, Cross said. Her mom started getting teary-eyed a little, but her dad was there and her brother was also there. He was with her when she was killed. This is a section called Quick Hits. City offices closed. City offices will be closed Monday for Martin Luther King Day. Here's a look at how this will affect trash pickup. Monday rollout carts will be picked up on Tuesday. Tuesday rollout carts will be picked up on Wednesday. Thursday regular service. Friday regular service. residential brown dumpsters will be serviced once. Apartments and commercials will be served twice. King Brunch and Freedom March. The Black Cultural Council of Odessa has scheduled a King Brunch as part of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. celebration at 10 a.m. Monday at Odessa Regional Medical Center Community Room, 515 Adams Avenue. The Reverend Windsor Archie, the pastor of the Rose of Sharon Missionary Baptist Church, will be the key speaker. The Freedom March will start at 1 p.m. at the Southside Senior Citizens Center. Prizes will be presented to the group with the highest number of participants. The Odessa Alumni Chapter of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, Inc. will lead the candlelight vigil following the march at Woodson Community Center, 100 East Murphy Street. The events are free and open to the public. For more information, call Pauline Davis at 381-8080. This is a section called Local News Roundup. Volunteers needed. CASA, Court-Appointed Special Advocates of the Permian Basin Area, Inc., 300 North Grant Avenue, has scheduled volunteer training classes from 5:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. Tuesday and Thursday, January 28th and 30th. All four classes are mandatory. Please note that prior to attending the first class, you will need to fill out your application and meet with Casey, the volunteer coordinator. CASA of the Permian Basin, Inc. trains volunteers to advocate for the best interests of abused and neglected children in the court system to ensure that each child is placed in a safe, permanent, and healthy environment. For more information, call 498-4174 or email Casey at casapba.org. Auditions. The Midland Odessa Symphony and Chorale has scheduled auditions for Concertmaster and for Principal Violin 2, February 24th, location to be announced. Application deadline is February 10th. Minimum requirements, candidates must hold a degree in violin performance. Master's degree preferred. For application details, visit tinyurl.com/YH2FC5H9. For more information, email personnel at mosc.org. This is a section called Other Voices, Letters to the Editor. How John and Carol Bushman Changed My Life. Businessman John Bushman and his wife Carol continue to bless families each year through their People's Pride program. My family and I are among the many the Bushman family has blessed. The People's Pride program is an organization to help students get into and pay for college. This program starts working with students as early as kindergarten. I was selected, along with 11 more students, by our elementary school principal and kindergarten teachers. My family and I were informed that being chosen for this program, I can receive a fully paid 4-year college scholarship to any public school of my choice in Texas. The only academic requirement needed to receive this opportunity is to keep grades at a B average or higher throughout elementary, middle school, and high school. The Bushmans also provide an after-school tutoring/studying time every day throughout a student's elementary years. They also provide a source for tutoring for middle and high school years if needed. Along with the 11 others, my after-school People's Pride teacher was Mr. Garcia, a retired ECISD counselor. Working with Mr. Garcia are three other teachers, each with their own class of 12 students from many different schools across Odessa. Each year, the teachers take their students on trips to the library, parks, museums, etc. They also provide the same for students during the summer to keep them learning. I am extremely grateful for being provided with a source of support for schoolwork and also religious support. In the People's Pride program, the students teach their elementary students Bible verses, their meaning, and their connections to our personal lives. This program gave me a sense of family with my People's Pride classmates and teachers. The People's Pride program has provided me with such an opportunity to succeed in life that I continue to work my hardest in school. I give credit for my work to Mr. Bushman, Mrs. Bushman, and all my People's Pride teachers for giving me the opportunity to attend and graduate college debt-free. This opportunity has changed my life in such a tremendous way that I am forever grateful. Signed, Sasha Gutierrez, Odessa. This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Odessa American, Sunday, January 19th, 2020. This is Section B, the section called Local and State. This column is entitled, Don't Let Winter Take Your Breath Away, by Levi Stone, RN, MSN, Chief Nursing Officer at Odessa Regional Medical Center. Having had a mild winter thus far, in fact one of the warmest recorded in the Permian Basin, the past week finally brought a steady flow of cooler weather. While the change may be welcomed by many, colder temperatures can be very difficult for those suffering from chronic respiratory diseases, CRD, such as emphysema, occupational lung diseases, pulmonary hypertension, and asthma. Fall and winter are among the most challenging times of year in caring for our respiratory health, particularly those already managing a chronic illness. According to the American Thoracic Society, flare-up of CRD symptoms occur twice as often in the winter than during the summer months. A major contributing factor to this is cold, dry air. Our lungs prefer a very warm and moist environment to function at their best, and when anything other than this exists, our bodies react to compensate for the change in conditions. As cold air enters the lungs, both blood vessels and airways constrict, reducing airflow. Since those with COPD and asthma can already have damaged airways and reduced lung function, further restriction caused by cold air puts these individuals at even greater risk. To help relieve the worsening effects of winter weather, warmth and moisture are two important items to maintain. When indoors, use humidifiers to add moisture to the air, but do make sure the indoor air you breathe is free of germs by following the manufacturer's cleaning and maintenance requirements. A moistened airway and lungs work much more efficiently by helping trap harmful particles and letting clean air pass through. Another key to maintaining clean air is changing the filters in your home. Depending on the type of filter used, this can be as frequent as every month. As mentioned earlier, cold air causing constriction of airways, which can further aggravate into a full-blown coughing spell, forcing some to reach for their rescue inhaler and fighting to catch their breath. If you must go outdoors on cold days, it's best to breathe through your nose or even use a scarf to cover your face to warm the air before it gets to the lungs. This time of year is also flu and cold season, leaving everyone more susceptible to illness. Colder weather and shorter daylight hours can have us spending more time indoors, thus increasing the risk of passing bacteria and viruses like the cold and flu from one person to the next. Other upper respiratory infections, particularly pneumonia, can spread just as easily, sidelining even the healthiest of people. Respiratory infections can have a devastating, even deadly effect on those who already have trouble breathing normally. Proper hand washing and avoiding people with colds and flu can help you and others from getting sick. But getting vaccinated is just as essential. Bottom line, if you haven't received your flu vaccine yet, get it as soon as possible. On top of that, if you or a loved one is among the higher risk populations with chronic respiratory illness, getting a pneumonia vaccine is recommended as well. Even with all the precautions and careful planning to help breathe a bit easier, we can still find ourselves having trouble and asking whether or not we should see a doctor. The following are certain times when you need to seek help and see your doctor. If your cough produces phlegm that is blood-tinged or you notice a change in color, you feel an increase or severe breathlessness. You have difficulty sleeping at night. You become more fatigued throughout the day with a pronounced lack of energy. Begin to have frequent headaches, particularly in the morning. You have fever. You have an unexpected weight gain or weight loss. You begin to have swelling around your ankles and legs. With an early glimpse of colder weather and more of it likely to be in the forecast, it's never too late to plan ahead and breathe a little easier this winter. This is the obituary column, Sunday, January 19th, 2020. Barbara John Branson, Odessa. Barbara John Branson went home to the Lord from her earthly home, surrounded by her family and puppies, on Friday, January 17th, 2020. Barbara John Branson was born Lady Faith Barbara Atkins to Temple and Leela Ray Atkins on March 24, 1937, in Ada, Oklahoma. She married Robert John Branson on June 3, 1963, in Las Vegas, Nevada. Barbara is preceded in death by her grandparents, parents, her husband Johnny, and her daughter Carmen Branson. Barbara is survived by her daughter Mary and husband Patrick Lewis, her brother Ralph John, one niece, two nephews, three great-grandchildren. Memorials may be given to MD Anderson Cancer Center, the Humane Society of Odessa, or a charity of your choice. Barbara loved color and always looked for the bright spot in all situations. The family would be honored if you choose to come to pay your last respects dressed in color. Family visitation will be held at Sunset Memorial in Odessa on Monday, January 20th, 2020, from 6 to 8 p.m. Her services will be held at Sunset Memorial in Odessa on Tuesday, January 21st, 2020, at 1 p.m., with burial immediately following services. To sign the guest book, please visit www.service@sunsetodessa.com. Lucy Chavez, Odessa. Lucy Ceniceros Chavez died peacefully in Odessa, Texas, at the age of 62. Lucy is survived by her husband Gabriel, children Jennifer Ornelas and husband Robert, Isaiah Chavez and wife Hannah, five grandchildren, brothers Raul and wife Carlotta Ceniceros of Sorrento, Florida, Aiden and Beatrice Ceniceros of Odessa, Texas, sisters Natty and husband Gabriel Natividad, Eva and husband Raul Pena, Maggie and husband James Ramirez of Midland, Texas, Florence and husband Julian, Sarah Velasquez, Karina and husband Roy Rodriguez, and Raquel and Doyle Shoemaker, all of Odessa, Texas. She is preceded in death by her parents Pablo and Antonio Ceniceros, sister Noemi and Daniel Andrade, and brother Juan Ceniceros. Lucy was born in Fabens, Texas, on April 1, 1957. A funeral is scheduled for 2 p.m. on Tuesday, January 21st, at Latter Rain Worship Center, 305 East 19th. Pastor Gabriel Chavez will be officiating the ceremony. A reception will follow at Copper Rose Venue. All are welcome to attend and celebrate Lucy's life with services entrusted to Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home. Jean A. Greason, Odessa. Jean A. Greason lived from June 16, 1936 to January 17, 2020. He is preceded in death by his son, Gary Don Greason, and granddaughter, Rochelle Skelton. He is survived by his wife, Mona Greason, son, Roger Greason, daughter, Vicky Bueno, son, Timothy Greason, five grandchildren, and three great-grandchildren. No services will be held at this time. Condolences may be sent to the family online at acreswest-funeral.com. Death notices. Glenda Ray Wagner Holder, Odessa. Glenda Ray Wagner Holder, 77, of Odessa, died Thursday, January 16, 2020, in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery, Funeral Home, and Crematory of Midland. Reverend Robert E. Lamb, Sr. Odessa. Reverend Robert E. Lamb, Sr., 82, of Odessa, died Friday, January 17, 2020, in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 1 p.m. on Wednesday, January 22, 2020, Basin Church in Odessa. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Reverend Dwayne Johnson is officiating. Arrangements are by Frank W. Wilson Funeral Directors of Odessa. Sarah Mona Mitchell, Odessa. Sarah Mona Mitchell, 87, of Odessa, died Wednesday, January 15, 2020, in Odessa. Celebration of life will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, January 25, 2020, Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home Chapel. Kathy Pounder, Odessa. Kathy Pounder, 64, died Friday, January 17, 2020, in Odessa. Services are pending with Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Leroy Wallace. Leroy Wallace, 75, of Odessa, died Wednesday, January 15, 2020, in Odessa. Celebration of life will be held at 10 a.m. on Wednesday, January 22, 2020, Bethlehem Baptist Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery in Odessa 2 section. Reverend Darren Willis is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Rita Yearwood, Odessa. Rita Yearwood, 90, died Friday, January 17, 2020, in Odessa. Services are pending with Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Helen Elizabeth Cooper, Katie. Helen Elizabeth Cooper, 88, died Tuesday, January 7, 2020, in Katy. Services are pending with Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Winnis Elliott, Cedar Park. Winnis Elliott, 87, of Cedar Park, died Friday, January 17, 2020, in Cedar Park. Celebration of life will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, January 24, 2020, Hubbard Kelly Chapel. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. This article is entitled Ex-Police Chief Accused of Taking $134,000 in Bribes by the Associated Press. San Angelo. A former West Texas police chief has been indicted on federal bribery and fraud counts that accuse him of taking $134,000 in bribes to help a radio communications vendor obtain contracts. Timothy Ray Vasquez made an initial court appearance Friday in federal court in San Angelo. He had served as the city's police chief from 2004 until 2016, when he was already under investigation and lost his re-election bid to present chief Frank Carter. Statements by Carter and the U.S. Attorney's Office both say the San Angelo Police Department has cooperated with the federal probe. The indictment, handed up Wednesday by a federal grand jury, accused Vasquez of using his position to help a radio system vendor obtain $11 million in city contracts in return for the payments. The indictment does not identify the vendor. If convicted, Vasquez could be sentenced to as many as 70 years in federal prison. Vasquez has no published telephone number and could not be contacted, and no record listing an attorney for him could be found.
That's the end of the first hour of the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American. We'll begin our second hour right after we take a look at weather.